Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We're podcasting on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get to eat it. Oh my! And did I eat it today? Oh my goodness. First things first, we've been cooking up some nostalgic food favorites for the last few weeks. Jeff and I, we polled the audience about featuring the glorious Monte Cristo sandwich. Elevated, of course. It's a Jefferson way of doing things. It was a resounding, mostly, yes. There were a few naysayers, but we don't listen to such foolery. It's a classic, Sammy, and we're here for it. On the menu today, it's all about the pork, baby. Sandwiches, the pot stickers. We're going to hog heaven, okay? That's basically what's going on today. And I can't wait to get into this Monte Cristo, the full Monte. Oh, yeah, it's the full Monte. Thank you, Peninsula Food Service, for supplying the proteins for today's production. Chefs in the Central Florida area, Peninsula is the largest distributor of Creekstone Farms beef in the Southeast United States. They're complete with a fully staffed butcher shop to help you solve your kitchen inconsistencies. Check out their dry age program as well. It's amazing. Our guest this week is Rhonda Findley, author, small business owner, restaurateur, and food stylist. You've heard of her. I know you have. Season 7 of the Emmy-winning Netflix show Queer Eye. Rhonda is on deck. Jefferson, baby. Pop that clutch, slam into that pre-shift, and get into that dish explanation. Let's go, man. Yeah, let's rock and roll.
Real deep.
Like deep. Like I almost fell asleep on the couch. I mean,
food coma.
Oh, like it's real. Listen, when people say, yeah, food coma, you got the sweats. No. It's real. I just experienced it. I was on the couch, like I'm like, John, I need some of that espresso. I need some coffee, man. He didn't do any cafe con leche. I was like, you know what? You're fired.
you needed something to go straight into the veins.
Man. Yeah. Well, I mean, the
pick-me-up.
I did. I took what was left in the pot, and I kind of just dripped it into my eyeballs. It was that's what I needed. All right, Jeff, please talk. Go.
Yeah, so the challenge, I definitely wanted to accept that one to make something that was totally different. I mean, we did a poll. It was over 100 different comments between the social media outlets that went around. So it was pretty spectacular to see that. Especially the engagement. So thanks everybody that does that and sees what we're doing. Cause guess what? There's going to be so much more to come too as well. I actually threw a little side, blindsided you guys with that Sloppy Joe. We also called it Sloppy Wilbur. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, it's pork, it's pig, it's Wilbur. We're talking Charlotte's Web, and yeah, it was a sloppy and it was delicious.
Yeah. So what's really great about that, going back, my dad loved anything with brown sugar, yellow mustard, Worcestershire. It was one of his things. He would always go to is having Sloppy Joes. So it was kind of an honor to sit there and try to do something and make something up that was a little bit more elevated. And I didn't want to just do any mundane. So Toastone cups, I just love the vessel. You can do so much with it. You know, Silent John over here, he's taking the rest of it. There was a quart. He's going to have some good dinner coming up, definitely. Then we did two versions of the Monte Cristo. The one I did was a spring roll, more of an appetizer. Wanted to showcase how you can do it across different meal periods or different meal plans. So appetizer, entree. Or sandwich. And then we did the pork loin. The pork loin I wanted to do at Salt and Boca. I know some guys or some restaurants out there don't do veal, so they do pork as a substitute. It was fantastic. It's somebody's dinner tonight, not mine.
Yeah, it's mine.
Possibly.
I mean, he's got the Sloppy Wilbur. He's got the Sloppy Joes, man.
Yeah. Well, you also have like a quarter piece left of the Monte Cristo because I wasn't going to have the full quarter.
So. I mean, you saw I had to unbuckle my pants when I sat, here at the mic.
Yeah, and it was great to see, like, what can I do to elevate it? And there's so many things I was going through. One of my buddies, who's a corporate chef over on Pillsbury, he posted one of the things that they did. I didn't even realize it, that the Monte Cristo is that, you know, popular of a remix. Another friend of mine, Jordan, out in San Francisco, showcased it in a donut. I thought that was absolutely incredible with arugula and then prosciutto di Parma or a birrical ham. And then I was like, okay, what am I going to do? Because there's guys are already doing it this way. I got to do something that's completely different. I used to do a creme brulee battered French toast. And I said, okay, took some smoked maple syrup, some Angel's Envy bourbon, added that to the creme anglaise, and then dredged that in after drying out some great pieces of thick challah bread and let it dry out, let it soak up as we were shooting. And then I layered in some Spanish style or Cuban style pork, bourbon ham that I smoked. Let's see what else we had. Honey maple turkey. And then I got a caraburo prosciutto, which is the equivalent to what would be Wagyu. It's Berkshire, but they do it in the style of caraburo in Japan. Same kind of thing they do with Wagyu beef in Japan. They do with the pig, the Berkshire. It has so much fat into it. It's got great flavor to it. So that elevated it. But here's where it really got crazy. The raspberry jam had a little bit of chipotle infused in it. And then I creme brulee or bruleed the top of the bread.
Oh, my God.
And Carl can go ahead and testify about the crunch and the everything else that went about it.
It was everything you thought it would be by looking at that picture. The photo that John took first of all, it was like 5 or 6 inches, you know, it was a huge, huge thick ass sandwich.
Yeah.
And you know, that torched, you know, creme brulee top on the bread. And then you get into the whole thing, the cheese, everything just worked perfectly. And, I think you did it proud. I would want to see that on somebody's menu, just the way that was. Not
even the spring rolls you'd said you would want to see on a menu too.
Yeah, I don't want to sleep on those spring rolls, man. Those are really good. In fact, I don't want to say one's better or worse than the other. They're very different. But I could see eating those spring rolls on a regular base. I can
yeah. Sandwiches like once a year.
this you know I mean seriously like you
you can't, you have to share that with like six or seven other people.
Well, Silent John, it was funny because he even mentioned about the Sloppy Joe was, or sorry, Sloppy Wilbur was his go-to, but he was like, and he's, just so everyone knows, he doesn't really like cheese that much. He likes mozzarella cheese and some other, you know, like neutral cheeses. He took a bite of it. His response was like, I even with the cheese, I like this.
Yeah. I mean, listen, so I told you, I mentioned it somewhere along the way that, you know, I'm a Bennigan's alumni, right? So I've had my share of the actual Bennigan's Monte Cristo, which is a classic. And it really matched better. I mean, really, when I posted on my socials about this, everybody kind of, everybody crept up from, you know, 25 years ago, like, yeah, go for it. Hell yeah. F yeah. Let's do it. You know,
yeah,
it was a whole thing. In fact, you know what? Shout out to Elizabeth Ferris, Christian Hummel, hang on here, Jeffrey Zimmer. You got, Ronnie, my boy out in Texas. You know, who else is on here? There was, what did I see there? Shannon Steiger. Like, these are all people I worked with. Bill Wartell. These are all great people that we all work together and have those like stories from, you know, way back when.
From Waiting, the movie.
That was about as realistic and
Bennigan's as you can possibly get as Bennigan's.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. I mean, you know, yeah, I don't want to get into it, but yes, it's all true.
You know, it's funny because when I posted Rod Smith, who's one of the founding fathers of the chapter to the ACF, the American Culinary Federation for Palm Beach, he was the one that he goes, you didn't challenge yourself enough. I don't know if you saw that one, and I wanted to make sure. And he's right. I mean, there's a level that you have to go to, and I hope I did it proud when he sees these. I mean, because John captures just an amazing artistry of his photography. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, one of the people that left before we're going to bring Rhonda in a second, but before right before that, there was somebody on your soul that set up, and I was like, you know, I gave him the big
boo. Yeah, that was Rod.
Okay, yeah,
yeah, like, that was Rod.
Take
because the thing. They did challenges. I remember back in the day, they did a one pot challenge, and you'd literally have a quick fire challenge at meetings. So they would do their work and whatever the meeting was, and then you'd have a quick fire. There was like six, seven, you know, chefs and students going at it. That's fun when you get to that level that you can take something and, you know, not saying to do the chop, but where do you think chop came from?
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like the same story, the quick fire go in. I don't know if anyone else has ever done that for a job. I've done that for several. I worked for a very famous chef and I literally had to go into the kitchen. I had 2 hours to prepare a 3-course meal and it was carte blanche, whatever you wanted to do.
See, that's to me, that would be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, stressful. Yeah, I get it. But
it's like walking into that house.
It's house. Right.
Carrying your own lamb rack.
We brought the lamb rack here. We're going to cook for you guys.
Do you mind if I
what
cook?
Did you say your name was?
Right. Whose house is this?
Where are we? Okay. So, all right. So today, when we bring Rhonda on, I mean, she's a food stylist. Very excited. Like she's worked with some big names. I'm going to let her break the, you know, who she's with and, you know, all that good stuff. But I feel like this is, I feel like John, this is going to be like a fun for John.
I even said John might even speak today.
He might say more than one syllable at a time or whatever. All right, Rhonda, you are on the program. Thank you for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's so exciting to, be with chefs and former restaurateurs and food lovers, because that's my language. That's my love language, man. And the Monte Cristo, like when you got to the part where you talked about Bennigan's, like my food memories of the Monte Cristo were, you know, going with my parents and like you could order anything you wanted, you know, sort of small town, like that was our like dining thing, you know, big deal to go to Bennigan's, and I got to order the Monte Cristo with a powdered sugar, and you know, it just brought back memories, and that's what food does. It tells a story of our past, and you know, where we're at in our lives, and the making memories with people that we love or people that we respect.
You know, Rhonda, so we're going to get into some questions with you in a second, but before we do, you know, go ahead and give like the airplane view, the 30-second view of, you know, who you are, what you're doing, and where you came from.
Thank you for asking. I got lucky. I've always been in the food business. I've been a waitress and I've been a sommelier. I've been a manager. And as I've gone through life, I've been asked to write cookbooks for chefs that have been on public television. I was always a ghostwriter, but I was kept a full-time gig while I did all those things. And as I've sort of progressed in my career, I was able to take every little bit that I've learned from all those different aspects of the food business and working under professional chefs that were very accomplished. I'm now doing freelance work on film and television, and mainly with food. So even though sometimes I'm considered a prop stylist, I'm a food stylist and I only work with food. And that's what I've done. And I just finished season 7 and 8 of Queer Eye, which I'm intensely proud of because of the people and the concept and why we do food. And in particular, working under Anthony Perowski, Emmy Award-winning star of Netflix, I've been able to tell those stories using my skill sets. And it's been an amazing ride. And that's what I am doing now and who I am.
And that is, and congratulations. I mean, you're part of that, and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, we spoke at length about this yesterday for about an hour, and you know, really, congratulations to what you got going on.
Thank you. I just want to, Jeff. Yes. You were talking about making sloppy joes, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to jump in, Carl. Like, you know, food as a tool to tell a story. That was one of the episodes of season 8 of Queer Eye. They came in and the star of that episode, their hero, was a gentleman that had been promoted to be coach at a deaf school. And it's a powerful episode. It is very touching, and you can watch it on Netflix, of course. But the food side of that was that him being the head coach, and they were trying to revitalize their deaf football team. And that in and of itself is just an amazing thing. But he grew up eating his dad's sloppy joes, right? And like when you said Worcestershire and yellow mustard and the like tinge of sweetness with this, you know, beef dish, which is classic kid food, right?
Yep.
we recreated his dad's dish for the concession stand at the high school. And some people might go, yeah, whatever. But the thing was, is that we talked to his dad, but his dad threw it all together, like without measuring.
Of course.
So Anthony sat down and really worked it out and did did the feeling out of that recipe. And through his inspiration, we were able to recreate that pretty much dead on. And it was really amazing. And so food, like when you said that, it touched something in me that really resonated. And that's what I love doing, telling those stories.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think what we say it a lot on the show here is food is a medium that's magical. We all watch movies to escape the reality. But in essence, what really brings us in this time travel, if you want to call it that, is food. Because when you bite into something, like when I first tasted the bite, I was like, my God, my dad's sitting right next to me. You know, obviously he had a little more brown, he had more brown sugar to it. Yeah. And that's the key, I think, that food does. Like that's one of the reasons why we started the Craveable Farmer's Dinner, because one of the things I think we missed in COVID after we came back from COVID, and as far as the restaurant industry as a whole, is that we miss the experiences. We miss the industry. We miss the service side of things. I think, but the biggest thing is that we missed or are missing the memories. And I think that's where we can really, you know, jump on board and really start doing again, is having these memories and forming memories.
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Yeah. So Carl and I were talking yesterday about, you know, the experience of food as a tool to tell a story. And, you know, chefs are passionate. They go to work every day to tell their inspirational vision, their story of what gets them excited about food. And for me, being able to, now I'm not a chef, you know, but, you know, like by osmosis, I've learned a trick or two over the years. But what really is exciting is being someone's best version of a sous chef and doing exactly what their vision is and setting up the mise en place and having everything ready to go. Because just like in the back of the house, when you're ready for service, like everything is just quick and fast in real time. And sort of that's the translation when you're on set, is that you knew the vision at the beginning of the day, and you gathered the mise en place and set everything up. So to allow the maestro to come in and make the beautiful music with the food, right? And tell that story. And that has just been so much fun, and kind of it sort of opens up a whole world of, maybe you love cooking, maybe you're really organized, but maybe a flair for flavor wasn't, you know, really your dish, so to speak. But it sort of opens up a whole new world of possibilities, food and film and television and food styling, that, you know, you still love food, but you can still find meaningful ways to work in the food industry. And that's really something that's been inspiring for me.
Rhonda, tell us about working with Chef Antoni Porowski.
Okay,
how's that like? Because, I mean, it seems, you know, seems like a terrific fellow to work for. And just the way that everything is set up. And can you get into that a little bit? Or
I can. I mean, I'm happy to say what I personally feel. And I think working, so I'm going to back it up a little bit. So Netflix relaunched Queer Eye. I'm sort of an OG Queer Eye fan. And when they were like, oh, Queer Eye is coming, and, you know, could you maybe help us out? Like, we have this job, little job. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. You know, I've never done that before, but sure. Like, if you'll have me, I'd love to come on board. And so you have these producers, showrunners like Jen Lane, who is an award. Like, she set records with her like her vision of the show, like winning 6 times in unscripted reality, which is a record in that category for an Emmy. They tell stories. And so when they cast these 5 gentlemen to be the Fab 5, they call them, and then food they cast Antoni Porowski. And I would say that just on a human-to-human level, he's kind and compassionate and connects with people. And that's probably one of his gifts. And not only do the heroes get that treatment, but if you're working as a crew member, you get treated like that too. And it's almost like, for me, it was almost like really just being given like this greatest hug and saying, you know what, we're in this together, and we're going to support you, and it's going to just be amazing. And that's how it's been. I mean, I've been lucky enough to go on the road with him when he was promoting his 2nd cookbook. He's a New York Times bestselling author. So the expectations are extremely high for delivering an experience to the public, but that's really tempered with like just the nicest, easiest person to work with. As somebody, he knows exactly what he wants to accomplish, and giving clear directions is just makes everything so wonderful. I'm just really grateful and blessed that I have that opportunity.
Where did your entrepreneurial spirit come from? You mentioned earlier, I mentioned, and you mentioned just you have so many things that you're into. You have a restaurant, and I need to know, a follow-up question is, why a restaurant? I mean, it's such, for people who aren't forward in that business, I would never want to just go open a restaurant. That's the craziest thing ever. I know what goes into it. But so where did your entrepreneurial spirit come from? And tell us about the restaurant.
Okay, so the three of us, and John, Silent John back there, you're amazing producer. We're gonna raise a glass just right now to the closing of Luna Libre. That was my restaurant. And I opened it before COVID, and we lasted and lasted and lasted. And she literally served me well because it was baptism by fire. I've always been more of a front of the house person. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to give a front of the house, like give a five-star experience in a very affordable neighborhood restaurant. Cause I live full-time in New Orleans and we're a food city, and that'd be another 2-hour discussion, but.
And thank you, by the way, speaking of, we're talking New Orleans, I got to thank yes. Sean Rivera, Mr. Pooch, for hooking the two of us up. I just want to make sure that we mentioned that.
That guy, Chef Sean Pooch, is amazing. Yes. Wow. Like, I went over and watched him make chiwis the other day. I mean, this guy is just phenomenal. I mean, that is the original Cheetos, man. And it is like, he's such an all around great guy. He's so talented too. So I opened this restaurant because my mom had the original cheese dip recipe from the lady that invented cheese dip. Okay.
What?
Now. Okay. Yes.
What do you mean the lady that invented cheese dip?
I
mean,
that
sounds like I could have accidentally come across that, you know, 1497. You know what I mean? Like,
where did you get 1497 from?
I just didn't know.
Her name is Margie Donnelly. Her husband's Blackie. They owned a restaurant in Rose City, Arkansas, where Jerry Jones, that owns the Dallas Cowboys, is from, by mm-hmm. the way.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'll do this food. And people were like, what's your food? And I said, it's Arklatex. It's not Tex-Mex. It's Arklatex. Like a grandma Arklatex food. Wow. Someday I'll revive it. But that restaurant, it broke me, and it allowed me to like come out of a little cocoon and realize that, you know, I can do anything. And so there's an entrepreneurial spirit. It was great. We had flaming margaritas. It was so awesome. But COVID killed a lot of people, and I continued though doing private parties and catering. I got a catering gig in a few days for that. But so I love creating things, and I got that from I worked for a German chef many years ago in Philadelphia, and he opened a restaurant for the federal government in Independence National Historical Park called City Tavern, where basically they created the Declaration of Independence. And within that restaurant model, we created dishes from old patterns that we found. And we had pewter-like tankards cast. And we found the beer recipe that George Washington had at the New York Public Library. And we took it back to Philadelphia, and the people at Dock Street Brewery did that. And by working with this classically trained European chef, I learned about a quiet kitchen. I learned about how you professionally run things, and then also how you do high concepts. And that's where I get my spirit from. Walter Stabe, he's an 8-time, 9-time award-winning Emmy, food person on public television, and I learned most everything that I know about making it happen from him.
You heard that, right? European chef and a quiet kitchen. Yeah. Kitchen. Yeah.
He'll still throw a pan at you, though.
Yeah, or a knife.
Yes. Yep, I could tell you stories, but, you know, and there's a difference between somebody pretending to run a European style quiet kitchen and somebody that really does run like the most amazing dining experience. And so I'm so grateful for that because I'm originally from Arkansas. And until I moved to Vail, Colorado to open the Hyatt Regency when I was 21 years old, I never had sushi. So, you know, there have been many years have passed since then. But, you know, I just really, and it kind of makes me a little wispy. I think about some folks that have been so great in the industry to me. I've been very, very lucky.
Is there then a roadmap to success, or is it dumb luck? I mean, you know, what is your interpretation?
Okay, so let's talk about being lucky just real fast. I work with this amazing woman in my business now who pretty much shores everything up so I can like run off to New York and do these great vignettes with Better Than Bullion and Anthony. And without that shoring up, without people like that in my life, I wouldn't be able to do that. But I said to her, oh, aren't we lucky? And she said, no, you're blessed. And I was like, that's right, because you can work really, really hard and never be lucky. And the universe, though, can hand you positive vibes. With that being said, you have to be a dreamer. And you have to dream big, like blue sky dreams, right? Like, and set your goals. Because if you want to open a restaurant, but you never go look at real estate, you're not even taking a step further. If you want to learn how to cook that Sloppy Joe recipe and maybe make Worcestershire from scratch, if you don't pull out like somebody's cookbook and just start pulling the ingredients together, you're never going to do it. You're never going to get anywhere if you don't have dreams and get on it every day. Wake up going, I'm going to do something towards my dream. And it's just, is it luck? Sure. Is it being blessed? Yes. Is it surrounding yourself with the right people and pulling up to work on time being step one? I think that those are just the basic keys to success.
So you kind of cut me off here at the knees, because what I was going to ask you next is,
sorry.
No, this all kind of coalesces together, because I wanted to ask you what your biggest blessing is. Right. So, you know, in the big scheme of things, you know, you've been in this industry, you've done different aspects of the food industry. Is there a singular moment that you can point to as a blessing, right? And say, you know what, it was then that this is the path where I'm at. Or is it just like a, you know, just a conglomerate of things happening to you over the years? And, you know, this is kind of, you know, where you ended up.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
Okay, that is so deep, man. Thank you.
We don't mess around here on the Walk and Talk podcast.
I know, my gosh, you know, but like, you know, so I'm going to circle this a little bit. You know, I think a lot of people listening that work in the industry would say that they have taken jobs that they were like, I've just got to take this job, and been surprised at how much they learned, or that, you know, they did that and 10 years down the road, that chef that they were working under became their best friend. But maybe you don't realize it until later on, like maybe things happened around you and you weren't really dialed in at the moment. And then you learn later on that that was like one of the best things that could have ever happened to you. I don't think the best thing that's ever going to happen to me has happened yet. But I think that every day I'm just sort of looking around going, oh, like you're going to meet Carl and he's going to ask you to get on his radio show. But you're going to just think that 5-minute call ended up being like an hour and a half, and you have no idea where that's going to go. I think that my biggest blessing is that I have learned to pay attention, and I've learned that. And so I guess that's my blessing. But, you know, like I was in Montreal last year, and it was a place I always wanted to go. And it ended up being the last tour stop on Anthony Porowski's Let's Do Dinner tour. And he had a sold out show and that's in his hometown. And when I was standing in the wings watching that go down, I thought, wow, okay, bucket list. Like I am here. I have put everything out and spent the last 5 hours making sure that that gentleman out there has what he needs to succeed. And that's, you know, that's what the kitchen staff does every day. Those are what the restaurant managers do every day. And when I look back, I go, this is so big for me in my life, and I'm waiting for more. And so I would say, like, that's my biggest blessing, is that there's going to be more. And I just don't know what it is, but I have a smile on my face knowing that whatever it is, it's going to be a great adventure. Just like when you sit down in a restaurant and somebody serves you that Monte Cristo, and that first bite is like a blessing and a big adventure, right?
Oh, I just—he can testify to that.
Yeah, I just had a heavenly bite. Not more than
there were a lot of ums and and. Yeah,
leave me alone. Are y'all? Did I choke y'all up? Are y'all remembering your
John,
life?
Can you get me Kleenex, please, John? Listen, Rhonda. First of all, I think that's a beautiful explanation. And in the end, I feel like what is it? It hasn't happened to you yet. I think that's profound. And it's really it's the positive energy and the hope factor that drives that. I think is really where. You know, where the weight of the comment comes in.
I'll tell back that up in for a second. And sorry for interrupting. As a chef, the ones that are doing out there, the ones that are slinging it and, you know, might not have the attention on them, when they make or perfect a dish, quote unquote, and there's the air quotes, they'll never stop. Mm-hmm. They'll always constantly think, I can do better. How can I do it better? And that her, what she just was saying is exactly that. I've done this, but now I've got to go for this. Now I've got that. I've got to go for this. And that's a true testament to the work ethic. But because there's no such thing as perfection, because everybody has their own interpretation of their own perfection. But that's that chef or that person's the ability to go search for what their perfection is.
When you can have a can-do spirit, a can-do attitude, while getting, you know, proverbially, you know, punched in the face over and over again, and
or plates thrown at you.
Yes, and you just keep driving forward. That's where the win happens. I mean, you know. So, but I don't want to get off on too deep of a branch there. Food styling. So it's pretty.
Yes.
I only wish, Rhonda, that you were here in studio, so you can kind of see.
I know.
If you were able to see like what John does when he's, you know, when he's arranging the shoot, the dish, and you know just what he's doing and the meticulous nature of what it takes to actually, you know, do this with the photography and the styling of the play. I feel like you guys would talk for hours. He doesn't talk at all, but I feel like. I feel like you would talk for hours and he would just sit and listen and there would be a lot to share.
Or not. Hey, Jeff, do you have one of those ginormous tweezers, culinary tweezers?
I have sets of tweezers.
Okay, so aren't those the most fun things? Like, did you ever think years ago that you would be so like with a big old giant pair of tweezers, like putting a piece of basil on a dish? Like, I have a set that Anthony gave me that I cherish, you know, like, and it's like, those are just tweezers, but like, I love them. They're the weirdest thing. And, like so many other, you know, little specialty niche culinary things that people, the chefs and food stylists use, to plate up a food for a photo. But really, don't you think that photo says something about who you are? And it's really important to like, you know, like set that stage. It's actually like a total palette right there. It's like an artist painting a painting.
100%. I mean, here's the thing. We're concentrating on the flavor profile and maybe somewhat of the look of the dish. What happened to me when I got introduced to John is it now became not only textures, it also became color contrast. It made sure you had XYZ PDQ on that plate. And it wasn't, we shoot not with fake food. We don't do anything because Carl needs to eat. He saves himself up.
Plus, you have the great Bender giving you this amazing protein to work with.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
You have to do it justice.
Peninsula,
right?
Peninsula is such a staunch ally of what we're doing, and we work so great together. And you know, you want to talk about blessings, that's them.
For yeah, us. Definitely. And a farmer,
you know, like
go ahead.
Right, they raise, you know, those animals, like they gave it to us, like they sacrificed for us, and somebody nurtured those animals, and then now you have the bounty of that, and it's sort of like you know, you cannot, it's got to cross your mind even right down to the end, like you can't waste a thing, and you can't you can't be slacker with it, because there's a lot that went into that lamb or that cow, the beef and the chicken, the poultry, getting to the point where you're doing your magic to it. And think that, yeah, it's important. It's like all these ingredients and what you do, because you couldn't do what you do without like the products from Peninsula. Like it just wouldn't happen.
Or the farmers themselves. I mean, the products we get from them is, you know, even now, both John and I grow produce. And so we looked at it and we were talking to them. Like, yeah, right after we did our event, the 13th of January, I harvest one of my cucumbers and it's still fantastic today. He's like, look at my pumpkin. It's a month old. It's sitting right there and it's fine. So we see the difference, and we know that, you know, when you cultivate your own and you have great products, the end result's going to be fantastic. But getting to your tweezers things, I know when tweezers became a thing, and now like some of the chefs out there are like, well, you're going to use your fancy schmancy tweezers. There's a place for them in different, restaurants. I think for me, it's an offset spatula is one of the number one things for me when you get something stuck.
Oh yeah.
It's a great thing to try to unstick it in the pan instead of trying to use a fist spatula or another thing that you need to turn over. Tweezers, I use them as tongs now, depending on, I have longer ones, so I can advantage to that. The only time I would use a tweezer, you know, all the time, I think with craveable dinners, when we were setting up something and I wanted to make it look meticulous and a certain way, that's when I'm going to do it. John uses it when there's a certain position or it might be off, or like today, we were looking at a plate, we're doing this plate, and just this bamboo sheet was like this liner on this Chinese plate. And he looks over and he goes, it's out. It's not lined up the right way. And I'm talking maybe a quarter of a hair off of the, you know, the thirds. And I looked over and I'm like, God, look at the attention to detail. He just nailed it. And I tell people this all the time. And you can please, now that I have somebody like you, I always tell people our shoots go four items. It's 4 hours to 5 hours. And by the way, food doesn't move. That's the meticulous nature that John has in it, and that's exactly what you do too, is right, well, how to set things up. That's your job. Yes. Part of it, like, explain. Yes. What you do, it's like what you go flow through, and right,
so it sort of is very organic, especially when you work for a talent that is juggling multiple projects at one time. It's not that they aren't 100% focused on the task at hand, like getting in front of the camera, but that once you get in a rhythm and you're repeating delivering a set that's ready for them to step on and do their magic. So they're prepping, just like people learn their lines, Anthony's learning the procedure to make the dish that he's going to make, and with someone that he's also coaching. But what I do is I go in and because of time, like if we're making carnitas or puff pastry filled with, you know, little dainty fruits and things, we don't have time to wait for all that to bake. So I'll come in also with finished dishes, and, but then we'll set it, and I sort of am, my plan is to do everything left to right, like you read a book. So all the mise en place is left to right. If I have a chef like Anthony that's left-handed, his stuff is set to the left. So if I'm working with you and you're right-handed, I'll set your stuff to the right. I know that sounds so fiddly, but it flows, because there are people taking still photos, there are people shooting video, and they have to be able to follow the movement and the handwork. And some of the set, you know, it's all ready to go, and then he'll step on and they might shoot B-roll prior to the hero or the person they're working with on Queer Eye, for example. But also like doing product endorsement work where they need just things set in a certain way with like the fresh food surrounding it, like Better Than Bouillon Stock, for example. So that needs to be set. And then you have to tweak and do what the client wants. And so therein is a whole another kind of set of parameters, which are really fun because you're delivering what someone asks you to. And in a world where communication can be difficult, it's really a good feeling when a client with an international product walks up and goes, "We've nailed it. That's exactly what I wanted."
You know, so it's feels the same. Good. You know, it feels real good too. God. Being a part of a team that right. won an Emmy. That's what feels
good. Oh my
good,
God. Right? I'm surrounded by greatness. Oh, I just like, cool. I tell you what, I still get up. So I watch the episodes when they hit and I fast forward to the food parts. I have to admit that.
So do I.
Okay. I'm just saying, I mean, if I had to be totally honest and, you know, I'm only on set for that. I don't get to see the whole thing. I mean, it is an intense amount of work. And so I fast forward to see what makes it in and what doesn't. And I'm often surprised that something that we spent so much time on just might not make the cut because at the end of the day, it didn't fit. The showrunner and the editors chose something else to be part of the story. But it's fascinating. But yeah, it's, you know, that's why... That's why I get to work under people and I'm still a work in progress because these people are professionals at what they do. And it was really my first experience in that kind of scenario. I did work on a public television show with a chef named Kevin Belton. And but I did all the writing and wrote his cookbook for him. So I wasn't on set. So it was really like exciting and an evolution of my career.
You know, there's a running theme here and it comes back to the storytelling as the tool, right, to deliver, you know, the story. I mean, I think that I think what you're explaining kind of highlights that perfectly.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro as the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions. Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Yeah, you know, I think I mentioned this yesterday, Carl. There's a food stylist out of Boston named Stephanie Tubin, and she worked on Hulu's series about Julia Child. And I would say that Julia Child is one of the most important figures in the American culinary scene, and I would say that the most important female as the American culinary scene and the American housewife sort of came out of the 50s. And we kind of all, if you're a foodie, you kind of know her story. And they produced two seasons of that where Stephanie Tubin recreated with her team, and it didn't get renewed for a third season. And the storytelling with food, because the food, Julia Child's a story, but her story is the food story. And, you know, like when these big companies don't renew those kinds of food stories out there for television, it really is something in our industry that we need to clamor around that to get that food story told. And, but the work, the dishes, the historical accuracy of the equipment is just, I mean, I'm, sorry if I'm nerding out a little bit, but not really that sorry, because it just is like a step up in the world of food where this kind of production happened. And we need to see more of that. We need to see more women in the culinary world represented when there's a relevant story to tell. And we need more diversity, and we need to tell the story of American food history, and maybe we need just a little bit more of that out there. And you guys are doing your part with this podcast and really reaching out to the people that are making food for us every day. And it's just a, you know, you talk about blessings, just to be here with you today is definitely a blessing. And we need to see more Julia Child, more Stephanie Tubin. She's kind of my idol in the food world right now. She's amazing.
Well, I just want you to feel comfortable knowing that you can be completely foodie geek, you know, geeked out. This is foodie nerd central. Okay.
So, feel welcome.
Feel welcome. Be yourself. Take your inner nerd and just put it in the oven. You know, 350.
It's gonna come out roast.
Okay. It's gonna come out delish.
Yeah. You know,
I love that. So what do you guys see? I'm curious. What excites you on television right now when you see food out there? Like, is there anything that's caught your eye lately that you think is groundbreaking, or you think we need to see more of? Because I know what I want to see more of, and I'm just curious what y'all are seeing. Are you too busy in the kitchen, Jeff, that you just don't have time to watch TV?
I'd love to see somebody come up that would be an Anthony Bourdain. We need another storyteller. And he was probably one of the greatest storytellers about food and bringing people to a table and having discussions. That's something, even some of the travel stuff that we see where different chefs are traveling around the country that they're doing and showcasing different parts of it. And I'm not talking about Triple D. I'm talking about like sitting down at a table and having a conversation with somebody that immigrated from another country and, you know, what was your background? Like, I'm reading right now Brother Luck, which is a James Beard award-winning chef. And he's talking about mental health, and I just got into the book, and it's really, for me, that's kind of where I'm going with it. But as far as the food aspect of it, I can't watch cooking competitions. It just triggers me. Yeah, I think some of it is the judges. You look at the judges and they're like, well, you have licorice and you have to go, didn't do that. I'm like, bro, go ahead and you cook it. Let's see what you come up with in that 18 minutes or whatever.
Clearly you're not going to be on the program.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine.
Yeah, you're not going to mold in.
No.
Yeah. I get it.
I don't need to.
Yeah. It's hard to, I find it very difficult to watch programming now. You know, I'm so ultra focused on our content. Like I don't know if I have the energy to sit down and try to receive, you know, something else that's on TV, you know, or you know, I
switch hard to social media. That's where I go. Yeah, and I'm looking at, like, I follow certain chefs and certain, you know, people that are self-made people that cook. And they do some fantastic work. I mean, the guy that does the chocolatier guy, Henri, he just makes me look inept. I just feel like, you know, someone that doesn't need to be in a kitchen, because that guy is so talented. But then that's the dessert side of things. There's savory peeps out there.
But you didn't see your Monte Cristo.
No, not
yet.
You
know what I mean? Like,
but he's a really great guy.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, when I went up to him and had said that, he inspires me, and he does, because some of the things I think about is like, how can I do something that's outside the box that people perceive, like the cotton candy we're talking with last week with Flossie. That would be fantastic to do bourbon, lardon of bacon, some apparatus holding cotton candy, and the cotton candy's melting into maple, and that candy's.
You see what you're saying is
we need to do that.
We need to get the ingredients today. Let's go. Let's get to.
You got
to
do that. I want to see that.
I do too.
You know, today. There's a young Korean guy that's just fermenting everything he can get his hands on. His name's Johnny. I forgot his last name, so that doesn't help everybody out there. But
Johnny, that's not common at all.
No, I know. But he's actually in. Sorry, I know, Carl.
I'm kidding.
But he just ferments. It's called cheong in Korean. And he, I mean, if it moves or doesn't move, he will try and ferment it. And some stuff is epic fail. And he has to set stuff up for a long period of time. And he's great. He's amazing. And I think stuff like that is so interesting to me.
Where's Johnny located? And, is he up in the Northeast?
Say that again.
Is he in the Northeast? Like, where does he live? What area of the United States?
In Korea. Oh, I don't know where. But and I'll send you the link.
Okay.
But also, like, I love Stanley Tucci. But I do think that we need somebody like Bourdain. I met Anthony Bourdain many years ago, and Carl, we shared a little story about him. And, you know, his storytelling, which is kind of coming full circle, telling a story with food is what gets me excited. And, you know, I'm not going to just fan out too much, but like Anthony Perowski is launching a show with Nat Geo and Disney where they're traveling the world and telling food stories. And so, you know, like Eva Longoria did one in Mexico, which was really great. And, you know, but it sure would be great if, you know, something would stick so we could, you know, go back to, I mean, nobody will ever be Anthony Bourdain, but the traveling and seeing the different cultures and experiencing the food, I think is something that expands your horizon. You can connect with food, and then maybe we would stop fighting so much and disliking.
Oh my goodness. You know what, Rhonda? Yes. Food is
the conduit for peace,
the great neutralizer. And you know what? You know what? You know what inspires me? People, not necessarily the star, right? But just people, right? So you look at like, I mean, just in here at the table, you know, Jeff, what Jeff does, that's inspiring to me. What John mm-hmm. does is, you know, with the photography, it's inspiring to me. It makes me mm-hmm. want to put the show together, sit down, and do all the work. Right. You know, in terms of just
a lot of work,
it's everyone here has tons of work. You know, Jeff has all sorts of prep leading up to today. John is leading up to today. Plus, he's got the you know, post-production stuff that he does, you know, and I'm arranging all these things, you know, behind the scenes to connect. And it's a lot of work. And I don't know that most individuals would understand what's involved in this, especially with such a small team. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who was just on the Food Network, and he actually brought us up to them and, you know, kind of showed mm-hmm. what we were doing, and they're like, oh, that's really, you know, it's really good stuff. And he said to that, he goes, well, do you know how many, you know, how big their team is? And these people have like, you know, 60 people, 80 people on a team, and
yep. someone's going to get fired.
Right. And, he tells them, he's like, well, there's, you know, there are about 5 people on this team. And they were they were godsmacked on, because they're like, what do you mean? Like, they're doing some pretty high quality stuff with just like a handful of people. So that my mm-hmm. inspiration comes from individuals who are creatives, and they put themselves out there for the sake of creating. And, you know, people are mm-hmm. going to like it, not like it, whatever. But, you know, here we are, we're doing the fighting the good fight.
Definitely. And you're a triple threat, because you have this podcast, then you have the visual and the video, and then you deliver the recipe, and people can access that in print and, you know, through the social media channels that you have, and you sort of cover everything, and it's just a gift. Like, it's not many people are doing the whole full circle thing, and it's important work. And as far as like being a connector, food being a connector, and, you know, I think the world could use a lot more understanding and empathy, and when you go and have a meal with someone that's not from your culture, and they may have different rituals behind their meal. Like if you go to Shabbat on Friday, or you eat dinner with your Muslim friends, or you're invited over to a household that might not be, that would be untraditional. You know, it all over food. right? And then you might have food that you didn't know. I was just looking at a guy on the internet named Otto Lengi. He's in Great Britain and he's amazing. I just leave it at that. And they use ingredients that the Western palate isn't really attuned to. And I was so fascinated that they made this eggplant dish with Burberry. And I was like, what is that? So I had to look it up. And then how am I going to order those berries? Because now I just want to know what that is. And then it's from Iran. And so like, I'm like, wow, it's from Iran. Well, now I really got to taste this because I, you know, it's just like another example of we are scared or afraid of other cultures, or we have this sort of hate for other people based on certain things in the news. But you can become very dialed in if you taste a culture. And that is another thing I'm passionate about. And I just think it's an interesting thing to talk about when you want to talk about food. You can't leave the cultural significance out.
I think one of the things you mentioned before about chefs and being creative and having that palate and being able to cook, I think more times than not, and I mentioned this actually during the first Farmer's Craveable Dinner, is if more chefs can cook what they want to cook, they have a passion for, we would have better tasting food around here. I find that the people that are from different cultures that are cooking from their culture are cooking with such passion and love. And even Bourdain mentions it. Go to somebody's house, they're cooking, or even India. Keith Saracen, a buddy of mine, says it all the time. When you go to somebody's home, they're cooking with love because that's the passion they have for inviting you and their guest into their home, but also showcasing where their culture comes from. And there's nothing more like that anywhere that you can find that.
Yeah, it's very intimate to share a meal with someone.
And I think that we're going to be sharing a meal together soon. That's what I'm thinking.
I love that. We're going to get intimate. Okay.
I think so. So listen, Rhonda, how do we find you? What's your preferred handle?
Oh my gosh. So I'm nolapopcity@gmail.com. I don't have a website. Just send me an email, give me a call, drive to New Orleans. We'll go walk around the French Quarter.
Fat Tuesday coming up.
Fat Tuesday is coming up.
It's coming up. I'm going to have a big party at 808 Charters. So come on by.
Rhonda, you're fantastic. We're going to do a lot of stuff together. I can see it now. I can see it clearly. Stick with me, kids. You're going to go real far, you see? You're going to go real far. You already have an Emmy. Who the hell am I? All right, listen, Rhonda, you're wonderful. John,
thank you, Carl.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, John.
My pleasure. John, you guys are freaking rock stars today. I just freaking loved that sandwich. Peninsula Food Service, as always, you guys are our darling. Thank you kindly, and we are out.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.